How's it going? And welcome back to On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On the Wire Pod. I am Adam Howe, and as always, I am joined by the 2020 TGFBI champion, Kevin Hastings. Kevin, the season's just days away. It's pretty exciting. And you know what? I think there's a lot of people, especially those who drafted early with a lot of fab dollars burning holes in their pockets. Are you ready to start spending? How do you feel?
Yeah, now the real work begins, right? I hope to not have to be spending. I know there's a lot of situations out there, especially as we're going to repeat multiple times tonight. A lot of things depend on when you drafted. And then, of course, a couple of the big injuries here recently that we'll get into. But if you drafted this weekend or even last weekend with a couple of exceptions, hopefully we're not spending too much money yet.
Yeah, you hate to be that one that's already behind the eight ball just in the first month of the season. Last year was a whole different animal. Yeah, you still had $1,000 in your NFBC leagues to spend over the course of 2.5 months. And now you got to go, everything's quote unquote back to normal, if you will. You got to make that money count over the course of 6 months. And that's tough to do, especially when you see a shiny new toy on the wire right at the beginning. So you got to have a little bit of constraint for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've brought this up before in the past, and I think it bears repeating. Just because there is a great option out there doesn't mean you need that option on your team.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to talk about a lot of guys that are worth at least taking a look at, but it might not make a lot of sense for your roster. And I hate to see everybody spend. There's something to be said about throwing out a keep your honest bid on a player. Like, you don't want to see a guy that's, ooh, like that guy really should. You want to make sure the rest of the teams in your league are spending their fab, or at least they're spending it to the level that you need them to keep yourself more competitive. So if you see a guy on the wire that's, you know what, I really don't need this guy, but if he actually goes through to somebody else's team for X amount of dollars, I'm going to feel really bad. And I got to at least throw out a $10 bid on this guy, $20 bid on this guy, because he's worth it in a vacuum. And I might be able to use him at some point in the next couple of weeks, but at least if I get him for 20, I can feel good that somebody else didn't. But if he goes for 120, more power to him.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So as you mentioned, yeah, there were a bunch of injuries. We are going to go through some news and notes each week now that the regular season's hit. And we're going to stick to the news and notes that are going to affect the possibility of guys you might be looking at on the wire, your fab bids. These are moves that might drive up prices on certain guys off your wire. They might make guys that you weren't interested in more than a dollar bid turn into a $5 bid. But we're going to focus on those situations. First and foremost, you got Kirby Yates out for the season. Tommy John, hate to see it, no matter who it is. And everybody, I think we are all expecting Jordan Romano to be next up. So who would you say, Kevin, who are you looking at to be the new handcuff there? And are you looking to fab him anywhere?
I think it's Dolis. And I think most people would agree. And I think we talked about this last week with Rick when we were had our whole episode on relievers. And it's...
Yeah, we had that whole episode, and then 2 days later, Yates gets Tommy
John. It was blown up. Yeah, exactly. I think I tweeted something along those lines, and we were texting back and forth. This is crazy. We just dropped the episode, and these guys are dropping. Unfortunately for them, and as you said, we hope the best for these guys. But I think it's Dolis. I took him in the reserve rounds of an auction draft yesterday. I don't know that I would. You really have to have an open spot, I think, to fab for him now. Unless if you had Yates and Romano, maybe putting in an inexpensive bid, just you still have the same situation would make sense. But depending on your draft and some other guys we're going to talk about and having spots, I think the more recently you drafted, even if it's Yates, the less likely I would hope that I would be in that situation, because he may go for a few bucks. And I don't know that I would want to spend that, but I'd probably throw 20 out of 1,000 at him, 15 to 20, especially if I already had the Yates Romano combo.
Yeah. See, I have the Yates Romano combo in a bunch of places, but mostly I have that combo in draft and holds in my DC styles. So obviously not an area that I can go and pick him up. I'm not going to spend a ton of money on a guy who wasn't the closer before. A move has moved it into, he's still not the closer. He's now the next man up at this stage of the year. So I think your $20 that you threw out there, that's going to be my max. And that's going to be only in a very special situation. If I am that situation, I agree. If I had Romano Yates, Dolas might be the guy I target when I'm dropping Yates, and just so I still have that handcuff, but I'm probably not going to spend more than $5 or $10 in that scenario. And if somebody gets them for more than that, personally, I'm okay with it. On the starting pitchers, Zach Gallen's hurt hairline fracture in his right forearm. He's still going to be able to throw from what I read. Obviously, he can stay off the mound throwing for any, he has no real timetable. All the speculatives that I've been seeing, at least in the 6 to 8 week range. So at least through the first month of the season, probably beyond that. Kevin, have you seen anyone worth replacing him from the Arizona rotation in week one?
No, not really, because I didn't even look at him who may be entering the rotation, because in most leagues, especially 12 team leagues, their number one, two, and three starters now are likely available, or at least there's a pretty good chance they're available. I don't need to be going looking at who's coming in after them. Madison Bumgarner is available in a lot of leagues. We talked about him a couple of weeks ago. Jared Weaver is available and a popular comeback guy, but he hasn't had a good spring. And then Merrill Kelly is available on a lot of waiver wires already as well. So I didn't even look at who might be entering the rotation, to be honest.
Yeah, Madison Bumgarner in TGFBI. So for those listening, TGFBI is a 15 team leagues. There's 29 leagues. So a good sample size on like roster percentages. Bumgarner is rostered in 44% of TGFBI leagues. Luke Weaver is rostered in 17%. And Merrill Kelly is rostered in just 12%. So all these guys readily available. Bumgarner the most rostered. So he might not be available in your league in those types of situations. But in a 12-teamer, we look at a lot of Yahoo leagues that are mostly 12-teamers. And he is 22% rostered in there. And honestly, I think a majority of that is name value more than anything else. And so in this situation, we're going to be doing this a lot throughout the year, looking ahead. And the thing, I'm not really looking at a lot of these guys. And we talked about Bumgarner a couple of weeks ago, of course. And I have him in a couple of places, don't get me wrong. But I'm not starting him for the first couple of weeks of the season. And I'm definitely not starting the other guys from Arizona based on their schedule. They're going to San Diego. They're going to Colorado in the first full week of the season. And then they host Cincinnati and Oakland. And they travel over to Washington and then Great America Ballpark after that. So like these are not situations that I think are going to be very favorable. So I'm not going to spend a ton of money on these guys, even though they are available and they have starting rotations. So there's something to be said about guys that have a rotation spot this early in the season, unless it's a stash play, unless like we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. Like if I can stash Bumgarner and I can keep him on my bench for a couple of weeks, especially in a trading league, and or I can trade for him after he gets blown up in Colorado and or what have you. Maybe it's something I look at and see how he's doing, but these aren't guys that I'm looking to spend more than. These are dollar day guys at this point for me. How about you?
Yeah, I realized as you were talking, there is one other guy in that rotation that may be available, and I'm not running out to spend money on him right now, because I think for most people, we would have to see quite a bit before he became highly sought after, but I would definitely keep an eye on Caleb Smith. I should have realized that earlier, just a name. And they actually, Roster Resource actually has him ahead of Merrill Kelly and has him the third starter there in Arizona now.
And equally rostered in TGFBI as Madison Bumgarner at 44% as well.
Oh, a little higher than I would have thought.
Yeah, especially after what we've seen recently. All right, well, moving on, another starter who's going to miss the start of the season is Kyle Freeland out of Colorado. Should we care who takes his rotation spot?
Absolutely not.
Moving on. No, that's a valid point. I think that's as much of a point as one needs to make. But I think Ben Brown over at Pitcher List would agree with us. All right. Eloy Jimenez, at least 5 to 6 months. For those in head-to-head leagues, maybe he comes back at the end of the season just in time for your playoffs. Got to make the playoffs first, though. And not having Eloy in your roster for the majority of the season, it's going to hurt those chances. And George Springer out for an indefinite amount of time. Oblique. Nobody likes to hear oblique. No, like you just cringe every time you hear the word and just assume it's a injury related to it. So these are two situations where, you know, your power outfielder more than likely your number one outfielder in your league on your team is out for an indefinite amount of time, but it opens up some playing time in real life for a couple guys. So, you know, who are the guys that you're looking to speculate on who you think is going to get extra playing time in those situations?
Yeah, as far as guys getting more playing time in Chicago, the way you framed that question, I think the obvious answer was Leury García. As we were talking off the air, we're not real sure what happened with him just today, but it sounds just precautionary, they were saying.
Yeah, precautionary shoulder soreness. He was pulled from the lineup at the kind of last second. Billy Hamilton was put in his place. But yeah, no updates as at the time of this recording as to the seriousness to it. So I don't like to speculate too much on injury speculation, but he was pulled.
So in my opinion, he's probably the beneficiary here. I know there's been talk of Andrew Vaughn playing left field and him bringing in someone as a designated hitter. That doesn't make much sense to me. And Adam Engel could be back in a week or two. The most recent information I found was a few days ago, Tony La Russa was saying he might be back in 2 weeks or so. So they have outfielders. I think I leave Vaughn at designated hitter if I'm the White Sox. I think that's what they want to do. Of course, they're experimenting because they may feel forced to move him to left field. I think they leave him at DH and we see Leury García for a couple of weeks and then hopefully they get Adam Engel back.
Yeah, I think that's the most logical. If for some reason García does miss any time or he's not ready for opening day for whatever, very selfishly, I'd love to see Andrew Vaughn in the outfield, at least for 5 or 10 days, depending on your league position eligibility requirements. And so that would be pretty amazing. There were some fun quotes that going around about how he's just going to rely on Lewis Robert to pretty much catch everything. And he can, so that's fine. Or he will. At least he'll try. And you can still put Zach Collins up in the DH spot, which people expected him to be more of a DH style guy anyway. So they have options, but there are outfielder options out there for the White Sox to just bring in. They give playing time. It's like I mentioned Josh Reddick. He's not the most obvious fit, but like he's the youngest, or he's like the most able, if you will. And he's just like that guy that you pull out of nowhere just to plug a hole. In my mind, he's still available. I haven't heard anything about him wanting to retire. I think he's 33 or 34 years old. So it's not like he has to retire. He's not at that age quite yet. We mentioned, obviously, Yasiel Puig's out there. Cespedes is still available. I can see a last second signing if something serious, especially if something serious with García's shoulder comes to light. And if that's the case, if you're desperate for an outfield spot or a bench spot, or if you're not desperate, like these are dollar bids that I don't think are bad bids, especially at like when your FAB bid deadline comes and like, there's still no extra news on this situation, throwing a dollar bid on Puig if he's actually available, which he was drafted in a good majority of leagues. See, Puig is rostered in 78% of TGFBI leagues. So it's a strong possibility he's not available on your wire. But moving on, there are a couple of starting positions announced across the league. A couple of somewhat noticeable ones. A couple of starting first basemen announced over in Texas. Nate Lowe was announced to be the starting first baseman. And then in Cleveland, Jake Bowers is named the starting first baseman, just as our friend Chad Young predicted, as Bowers is out of options and Cleveland going to give him the opportunity to do what he can. Bobby Bradley was sent down as well, even though he was smacking the ball around in spring training. So my question to you, Kevin, is there any aspect of these announcements, these two specifically, that do you care?
Nate Lowe is interesting. And what's interesting about it is Guzman was outperforming Lowe by quite a bit this spring. And a lot of people were excited. They free Nate Lowe when the Rays let him go in that deal. But it's really interesting that they named him the starter when he needs to get more at-bats at AAA might have actually been a legitimate excuse for once. So it's intriguing to me. And personally, I have him on a Dynasty League team. So I'm going to keep a close eye on this. And maybe they feel like he's been getting good swings and just not good results. So it's something I'm going to take a closer look at and try to keep an eye on. That's the most interesting thing to me. I think in Cleveland, I think the situation is the opposite. I think we're going to see Bobby Bradley pretty soon, that it is the options. And they're, it's getting so cliche that it's words I don't even like to use anymore, manipulating service time. But I don't think the Bowers lasts as long as hopefully Nate Lowe might in Texas.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. All right. And then another injury, of course, Foy out for at least a month with knee surgery. And Jay Bruce's contract was purchased and he is on the roster. He is in New York as the probable starting first baseman for the Yankees, at least when it comes to opening day. We'll see how long that lasts moving forward. And so I think this is somebody we're going to talk about a little bit later. Is there any other aspect of the Yankee lineup, Kevin, that you think this might affect, or is this just all about Jay Bruce as a lefty in Yankee Stadium?
I think it has mostly to do with exactly that. Jay Bruce as a lefty in Yankee Stadium. They don't have many lefties in that lineup. I was actually pleasantly surprised when I took a look at Jay Bruce's page. His strikeout rates have not gotten as bad in the last few years as I would have thought. He may actually thrive in this role. He's not going to have the batting average. It's been 4 years now since he's hit above, 223. But he's going to hit for power, especially there. And like I said, he doesn't strike out as much as I had thought he might.
Yeah, to your point, he is, at least according to Roster Resource, he is the only lefty beyond in that lineup. Aaron Hicks, switch hitter, of course. But Jay Bruce, the only pure lefty in that entire lineup. They have him slotted in the six hole, slotted between Gleyber Torres and Gio Urshela. So I think that could definitely fluctuate based on who they're facing. And I'm very interested. And you know what? We'll table this for now. We will get into Jay Bruce a little bit later. So all those Jay Bruce fans, don't worry. There's plenty of Jay Bruce talk coming up. All right. And then the most interesting thing that I think on this list is Eugenio Suarez is looking more and more likely to be the starting shortstop for the Cincinnati Reds, which would push, of course, Mike Moustakas back to his more familiar third base and open the door for Jonathan India to make the opening day roster as the starting second baseman. And those who thought that maybe that might be filled by somebody else, a lot of their guys have been sent down. Garcia was sent down as well, and Senzel was just pulled from the outfield spot. So those who think that Senzel could get pushed back into second base, which he has plenty of experience in, that's probably not going to happen as well. Jonathan India, again, fits into that situation, at least in NFBC leagues, where if he wasn't drafted, you can't pick him up. But Kevin, is this somebody you might be looking at fabbing next week once he makes the opening day roster and he's available to be picked up, at least in NFBC leagues?
I think so. I may not bid enough to get him. I'm not going to go crazy. It probably depends a lot on what kind of opening weekend he has. I'm probably more interested and more apt to get him if he has a rough start the first three or four games this opening week. He's so interesting to me. Less than 3 years ago, he was the number 5 overall draft pick, and he's 24 years old. And he skyrocketed up the prospect lists immediately after being drafted and then plummeted. And now he's come back. And then we have this whole issue that we've talked about several times on this podcast that we have very little information on what these guys were doing in 2020 at the alternate sites. But evidently the Reds were very happy with what they were seeing. And it's continued into the spring, and I'm really intrigued. If it's somebody we can get a hold of inexpensively, it could pay off. Looking at his projections really quickly, most have him at about 110 games played and mid-teens home runs and 5 or 6 stolen bases. If he plays a full season because he's starting out the season at second base, we can almost add another third to that.
Yeah.
We're looking at close to 20 home runs and double digit stolen bases right out the gate for a guy that, if he has improved his contact, which is what we're hearing, that's the whole thing that happened at the alternate site and improving his contact.
He's showing it in spring
for a decent average. So yeah, I am intrigued here. Not going to go overboard. Like I said, this is a guy that personally I might hope he has a rough opening weekend.
To an extent, like he wasn't drafted in a bunch of, I'm looking at my, like he wasn't drafted in my TGFBI league. And so if he, this is a guy that he was speculated on for, it's been speculated that he might make the opening day roster for at least the last, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. And so drafts that have been happening for the last 2 or 3 weeks, people are specking on him. And if they're not specking on him in that situation, especially in a 15 teamer, I don't think that he's going to go for a ton of money in this first fab week he's available. Though he is a small sample, of course, of spring training. You can only read so much into it, but I mean, he's hitting 333, 462, 595 across 42 at bats in 19 games this year in spring training. So he's got two homers, 6 RBIs, 6 walks, and 9 strikeouts. So he's showing that, you know, he can hit the ball much better than his spring training of the year prior. And he's shown that he is making adjustments, at least statistically, in these small samples. So somebody worth looking at. I think you bring up a great point. It's like one of those, I don't want to hope anybody does poorly, but if he does, I'm going to take it. I'm going to try to take advantage.
They have a 3-game series against the Cardinals. If he has 2 home runs,
it'll be like Favapalooza in week 1
and steals a base, then I won't get him.
Exactly. All right, great. Next section that we're going to move into on a weekly basis is our What Did We Learn section. And typically this section is what we're going to talk about, the bids that we suggested the week prior, some of the results that we found across different leagues and how, what they did go for based on budgets and league sizes and types and whatnot have you. And hopefully we'll be able to collect as much data as possible from all you guys. Tweet us out who you guys won in your bids, some of the standout bids that happened in your leagues, even if they weren't players that you won off the wire. And we love to be able to see where the trends are going throughout the course of the season. And we'll talk about that and what we learned and where we can go from here. But for now, obviously, we haven't learned anything because nothing's happened yet. So, Kevin, I think we talked about this a little bit. We touched on it at the beginning of the episode, but I want to dive into it just a little bit before we go into some of our suggested fab bids for this week 1 fab period. And that is the drafting time of year. And we talked about this with Justin Mason a couple of weeks ago and the advantages or disadvantages of drafting early in the draft season. And when I say early in the draft season, starts in October for the all around. We might see the most percentage of all drafts happening this weekend, but they happen for 6 months prior as well throughout the year, whether they be draft and holds or best balls or OCs and other fab leagues. Doesn't matter. They're happening a lot. So, Kevin, can you talk? You drafted a lot more leagues than I did early on. I know a good chunk of them were draft and hold styles, but what have you seen or what do you see as like the advantages or disadvantages when it comes to this first week of Fab and the type of guys you on the wire when you draft a team in, say, January or February before a lot of these injuries have happened or before a lot of these rotation spots have been announced or closers have been announced? Or things like that versus drafting this weekend when you know everything.
Yeah, I think most of what I did prior to the turn of the year was draft and holds and best balls. And I'm struggling to think if there's even any fab leagues available prior to that. I can't think of any. But as you said, even January and February, a lot has happened. And there's so many guys available that are being drafted today, even in some leagues inside the top 200 that are available in nearly 90% of 12 team leagues on Yahoo and ESPN. We'll get into that here in a little bit. But I think in general, to answer your question, I think the biggest advantage, and I see it as an advantage, is drafting speculative closers early and then going back now and looking at my leagues and seeing which ones are working out. Another thing is guys that don't have jobs yet and land in a perfect position. Another guy we're going to talk about later, Michael Franco, perfect example. I grabbed him in a spot or two, ecstatic of where he ended up. And I enjoy that aspect of it more than I dislike the possibility of losing guys to injury in the offseason, because yes, it happens, but it really doesn't start happening in my mind until spring training. And by then we're into really getting into draft season anyway.
Yeah, to your point, like Michael Franco is a good example. I think that if you did a draft in January or February, there's a strong possibility that a guy like CJ Crone is going to be fabbed in this first week. One.
Yeah.
And the way I see it is it's great to be able to get those discounts, if you will, especially on those closers or speculative closers and what have you. But I also worry about just being behind the eight ball when it comes to spending your fab dollars in week one on a CJ Crone or like guys like that. You're like, there's no way I can't use this guy. Like, I know that CJ Crone would be my starting, at the very least, my starting corner infielder in a league that has that position. And so it's going to be really difficult to not spend that money on a guy, on an impact bat like that, very well could be on my team all year. And so that's tough. It's tough to know that if I do win this, that's great. But now if I spent 100 or even $200 on a $1,000 budget on a guy like that, I'm going in, to your point, if you're budgeting $30 a week, now I'm budgeting $20 a week because I've just spent, I have to say to myself, I used my hammer. Like, I used that $200 or $300 that I've set aside for the hammer in week one. So I'm handcuffed. Now, there's also something to be said that if you're going to spend the hammer, spend it on somebody who's going to help impact your team the longest.
Also, it's another dimension to the puzzle, which is what I love about fantasy baseball, the puzzle. To your point, he may improve your team, but is it enough of an improvement to spend that fab on? To your point, you could at least use him as a corner, but am I happy enough with my corner not to go overboard? So it's just another dimension, and it's what's fascinating about this game.
You just got to know what is right for not only your roster, but also the way you want to manage your team.
Your comfort level.
Yeah. There's lots of players out there that are great to have if you're willing to put in the time and effort to manipulate your lineups, to change your rotations based on matchups, and if you're in a tinker. But if you're not a tinkerer, if you want to be more of a set and forget it guy, but you're still in a fab league and you didn't just do draft and holds all year or best balls all year, spending money at the beginning maybe the way to go. This is a guy I know that's going to be in my lineup all year round. I can spend an extra couple, 20, 30, 40 bucks. Cause you know what? I'm not going to be spending money all year round. I'm not going to do the things that Kevin and Adam say I should do. Cause I just know I don't want to, I don't have the time. I have 50 leagues. I don't have the time to do that for all my leagues. So you got to know your own comfort level as a fantasy manager and as opposed to just your roster construction as well. Let's get into, there's a lot of suggestions we can make this week, which is interesting considering that everybody just drafted. And you know what? This is great because these are guys that we're looking at as possibilities for fabbing. For those who haven't drafted yet, keep an eye out. Like, these become the guys that maybe you don't want to spend the fab on in week one and drop them with your last couple picks because they're readily available in most leagues. And we'll get into a lot of those percentages as well. So we're going to break each week. We're going to break this down based on categories. So we're going to be talking about guys that can help your power numbers, home runs, RBIs, speed numbers, stolen bases and runs, and then overall hit. So these are guys that either can give you a little bit of boost in your average, but mostly guys who have good matchups coming up and a lot of playing time. So either they walked into playing time or they might be in a lineup that's set to see seven games next week and no off days, for example. Or maybe they're traveling the cores or what have you. And then on the pitching side, we'll move into what we call counting stats. So guys who can rack up some wins and some strikeouts. Mostly this is going to be your two starters, guys that might be following, or your long relievers that might get a vulture win and what have you. Or some good matchups, as a starter that with a good matchup coming up. Guys that might be able to just chip away at your ratios. So maybe a long reliever that has a good opportunity, the hot hand, or a new guy on the block that has been just cruising and he's worth spending some of your fab on to wait until the wheels fall off. And then, of course, everybody's favorite, and that's saves. So that's self-explanatory, whether they be backup guys or committee members and what have you. And then we'll always throw in a wild card, just a guy that Kevin likes as a speculative play, or just somebody in any position that could fit into any of these categories as well. After that, we will talk about some stash options, but we'll cross that bridge a little bit later. So let's start with the lineup options, Kevin. We'll stick everybody's favorite, this power hour, if you will. And who, like, what are the, at least name, we already named two of these guys. So I'll just say Jay Bruce is somebody to keep an eye out. We'll get into Michael Franco in Baltimore, somebody you're going to look at, but who's somebody else that you're looking at on your wires for power?
If I lost Eloy Jimenez, the first name I'm hoping is available is Justin Upton. He's only rostered in 11 to 15% of leagues, depending on which site you look at. However, he's being drafted in every league I've seen recently. Some of this has to do with 12 versus 15 team leagues. So if you're in a 12 team league, obviously there's a better chance he's out there. But even in 12 team leagues recently, he has been drafted recently and moving up, getting drafted earlier and earlier. I think it's not the spring training numbers. We don't pay a lot of attention to them, but those numbers indicate he's healthy. And one thing I didn't understand about Justin Upton coming into last season was the narrative that he's a beat up old injured guy, when that never happened until 2019. Prior to that, he had over 600 plate appearances for 8 consecutive years.
What was that, turf toe?
Yeah, and he had knee problems. He had multiple different injuries in 2019. So that's what added to that narrative. And I understood that portion of it to an extent, but it wasn't like he'd been injury prone his entire career. He's literally never been injured before that. And then last season, he started to heat up as the season went on. And the narrative was streaky Justin Upton is having one of his hot streaks. Maybe you should grab him. And he's been a pillar of consistency throughout his career, except for 2019. And I've seen him in some interviews this spring training. He looks happy. He looks like he's having fun. In my mind, that's not a guy that's still hurt. That's not a guy whose knee is bothering him. That's not a guy who's having to sit in the ice bath every day after workouts. It, to me, he's one of those guys, like you like to bring up, that Paul Sporer says all the time, maybe he doesn't have to be on my team, but he needs to be rostered in every league. He's that guy for me. He's the guy I'm hoping is available if I lost Eloy Jimenez. And it's really hard for me to believe that teams that start 5 outfielders have 5 better than he'll be if he's healthy.
Yeah, and to your point, like he did have a nice little streak going on at the end of September to finish out the 2020 season. 4 home runs in the last 2 weeks of the season, a handful of hits is on top of that that weren't home runs. And I love knowing you can't put too much stock into narrative and what have you, but I do love hearing that he's happy. I love hearing that he's healthy. That's the number one thing. Healthy before happiness, if you will. So
I don't think he would be happy if he wasn't healthy.
That's probably a good point. To your point, the 12 versus 15 teamers, I think that has a lot to do with it. You started to say, like, he was drafted in all the main events that have been drafted thus far, and he was drafted across the board in the 29 TGFBI leagues, and those are 15 teamers as well. Not owned very much, though, across the board in Yahoo, ESPN, which are majority of those are 12 and even 10 teamers as well. So the replacement value you find on the wire in those leagues, especially in the outfield, and to your point, especially in those leagues that only have 3 outfield slots, and the standard Yahoo league only has 3 outfield spots and 2 right. DH and 2 utility spots, but that could be anybody. And so it's not too surprising, especially with what we've seen recently, that Upton is available in those types of leagues and not so much in a 15 teamer, especially on an NFBC platform where you have 5 outfielders. But if he is available and you lost Eloy, that's a name definitely worth taking a look at. We'll get into bid suggestions in a second. So let me ask you to decipher between the other two that we mentioned. That's Jay Bruce, the lefty in Yankee Stadium, which is always something that people want to see. And then Michael Franco getting the starting third base job in Baltimore and Camden. So we got two power guys, one a little bit older than the other, in very batter friendly environments, at least while they're home. And you know what? They're going to play in each other's stadiums a couple times a year as well across the AL East, plus going to Fenway and then wherever Toronto plays their games. Who do you like better of those two? And then I'll have you rank them and how much you think they're worth bidding on.
I like Franco better because he's got the job all season as long as he performs and stays healthy. Voit, there's reports he could be back 3 to 4 weeks. Now, he's had injury history before. I don't expect him to come back and jump in the lineup and play every day. But if Voit gets healthy, then Jay Bruce goes back to a backup role, playing a couple of times a week, probably. Franco has the job every day. Also, Franco's probably going to hit for quite a bit better batting average. And I think that surprises a lot of people. He's not a drag on your batting average. He's not going to help it much, but he's right there at what we're typically targeting for our team batting average to be. So Franco pretty easily for me, but if he's not available, and it, especially if Voit is the guy I lost, that's an easy backup right there to bring in Jay Bruce. But
yeah, you bring a good point about if you're the team that lost Voit. The flip side of that is that you also got to know who in your league lost Voit, because somebody lost Voit was drafted.
Yeah.
And he very well could be the starting first baseman, or he most likely is the starting first baseman for somebody in your league. Might be someone's corner if they went heavy in that department early on. But knowing what their roster makeup is will give you a better insight into how much they're going to likely spend on a replacement. And if Voit was their starting first baseman and their corner is a third baseman and their bench is light, if you will, on a replacement, they might go hard at Bruce because he has the first base eligibility, and they might not go after the other guys that are on the wire. So just knowing what's going on in your league, and especially if you are the type of player that only plays in like a select few fab types of leagues, it's like really focus in on what's going on the rosters elsewhere, not just your own. And if you like a guy like Bruce, if you like Bruce and you want to spend $10 or $15 on him, no, that's probably a keep your honest bid if the team that lost Voit is desperate for a first base replacement. And Bruce is one of the very few guys on the wire that has a guaranteed job, at least as a for the first month of the season. And a team that has Voit is more likely to spend on Bruce, because when Bruce does lose the job, they've already got Bruce's replacement. So they're not worried about spending a lot of money on a guy that they might lose, because they're just going to lose him for somebody that they've already got. They already have him. So it's really good to know what's going on across your league and not just on your own team. All right. So in a vacuum, Kevin, like, what do you think? Let's just put it this way. What do you think on average these guys are going to end up going for in leagues? And then how much do you think you're going to be willing, if you're in the right situation, to post up based on your budget that you're keeping for yourself?
I think, like you just said, that the Voit owners, if they don't have other first basemen and their corner's a third baseman, that's really the only scenario Bruce is going to be in high demand. And Franco, these guys don't have the greatest appeal. Even if Franco was on a team coming into the season, he had a nice shortened season with the Royals last year. He still doesn't have a great reputation. I think he had 38 RBIs in the short season. So I don't think typically by name, we think that's going to hurt us in what we have to spend on fab. I think with both of these guys, the names save us money. And so I would definitely stay within what I'm budgeting for myself. And like I said last week, it's diminishing throughout the season. I don't just divide the amount I have by weeks, and that's what I have. But I'm going to make some other bids this week as well, and I don't think I have to spend a large percentage of even this week's budget on them. As I said, I'd go more Franco than Bruce. If I really needed Bruce, I'd probably look at what we were talking about earlier. I wouldn't go more than $10 or $15 unless I had to have him, maybe 20. Franco, I'd be willing to go half or a little more. I'm thinking I'd probably have close to a $40 budget for this week. So I'd be willing to go half or a little more. And I love that you're putting this in the notes so we can see how well that would work out next week.
Got to keep yourself honest. And then, of course, the big one is Justin Upton, if he is available. And let's go to the extreme. Like,
if I'm okay everywhere else, and I want Justin Upton, I think, at this point, and ride him while he is presumably healthy. If I'm okay, I could go my $40 that I have set aside for the week. If I have Eloy And I think other people are going to be after him as well. I'm not cutting too much into my chunk I have set aside for my one big week. A lot of teams, if we're looking at this as the leagues that have $100 fabs, there is a difference. There is a difference between, it's not just a straight percentage. We can do different things with $1,000 budgets that you can't do with $100 budgets. So if I'm thinking, if I had a $100 fab budget, which I do in some of my leagues, I would go $6 or $7. And I think that's the more restrictive type of fab. So if I'm going to do that in a $100 fab league, I have to be willing to go 60 or 70 in a $1,000 league. That would be at the extreme if I really need him. But I think I would go the 40 as long as I don't really need someone else as well.
All right, great. So keep an eye on that, but depending on the situation you guys are in. And I think you touched on it just a little bit, and we'll get right into it. And it also depends on where you are at elsewhere in your roster. You touched on it. If you can absorb Eloy, the loss of Eloy, or somebody like that in the power department, you go on the lower end of this. And it's like, if you don't get them, you don't get them. You just absorb it and you move on to the next week and see what else is going to be available. But if it's where you're really low, if you're really low on, then maybe you splurge, but maybe you need some speed instead. And so we've got a couple of guys in our speed department. I'm going to try to fly through a lot. We have quite a few names on this list. I'm going to do is, Kevin, I'm just going to list them all off, and I'm going to have you go over what interests you about each one. First and foremost, we have Manuel Margot in Tampa Bay, who is slotted to probably bat second most days for Tampa Bay. Tim LaCastro, who is looking like he's going to be either, if not a starter, at least a guy who's going to get a lot more playing time in Arizona than we first thought, with the demotion of Dalton Varsho and Cole Calhoun being hurt. Cedric Mullins looks to be the starting center fielder for the Baltimore Orioles. And then Elvis Andrews slotted to be the, you know, starting shortstop now for the Oakland A's after being traded from the Rangers. Talk to me about these guys and what interests you based on what you might need in your leagues.
Well, I think the most surprising thing to me about Manny Margot is that he played in 47 out of 60 games for the Rays last year. And that's not what we think the Rays do. They have this reputation of they move guys around so much and they move guys in and out of the lineup so much. And that's true. But a lot of other teams do as well. The Dodgers do it. The Yankees do it. So many of these teams do the same thing. And if this were a 162-game schedule last season at that rate, Margot played in 130 games. I think that would surprise a lot of people. And he post-hype, love those guys. He was 3 years ago, still in San Diego, we were waiting for this to happen. And he's approaching that point where if he gets those 130 games, we're looking at 15 home runs and 20 or more stolen bases. That's what he's been doing the last couple of years, his final year in San Diego, and then the pace he was on last year in Tampa. LaCastro, we all know about his success rate that he had in, I think it was 2019. He was 19 out of 19, if I'm remembering right, on stolen base attempts. We love that. Cedric Mullins, a lot of people were hoping would get this job. I like Baltimore Orioles. I did. I loved them last year, too. I think their lineup is a lot better than people realize. And sure, it's because they play in Camden Yards. But I think that team scores more runs than people realize. And you got a guy that can steal the bases that he can steal. And then Elvis Andrews, I don't expect him to set the world on fire, but he's been batting at or near the top, the A's lineup, most of this spring. He may hit a little lower in the order against righties, but still middle third, I think, is what Mike Kierlin has been putting in his spring training report that we've all been looking at.
Yeah, shout out to Mike Kierlin.
I just noticed, I can't believe I've been looking at this every day, and I just noticed in the bright red letters at the top, the tip jar. I'm definitely going to contribute to that, and I think we all should.
I literally just saw that for the first time an hour ago.
Yeah, myself. I don't know why I haven't noticed before. Maybe he just added it because I hadn't noticed it. And everybody's been commenting on Twitter how awesome that tool is. And it is. Yeah, I'm definitely going to contribute to that. So all of these guys have the same appeal, the stolen bases. I think For me, Margot comes along with a little more power than the other guys. Elvis Andrus has hit for power in the past. Don't anticipate him approaching 20 like he has done before. But yeah, any of these guys. And it probably depends on how much you want to spend. If Margot is available, he's in that range where he's been getting a lot of talk lately. You're not going to be the only one bidding on him. A couple of these other guys you might, including Andrus. So there's definitely appeal to each of them, and price may play a factor.
Yeah, Margot rostered in, across the board in TGFBI. LaCastro only 39% rostered in TGFBI. Mullins at 61%. Andrus is that across the board as well. So a couple of these guys in 15 teamers may not be available. So you might not have your pick of the litter, if you will. If I'm desperate for speed, and that's all I'm really looking at, I'm pretty happy with any of these guys at this right point. I mean, everybody's looking for speed. And so this is a situation, I think, and Kevin, you can go into a little bit more detail on this, that when you're setting your waterfalls, you're setting your stipulation bids or consolation bids. I don't know that I may not change my bid number.
Right.
Like I might not say, if I don't get Margot at $5 or $6 or whatever I'm going to bid, I'm happy spending $5 or $6 on any of the other guys. What number do you agree with that? What number do you think fits each one of these guys?
I 100% agree with that. Unless I really need a five category guy. I shouldn't say five category guy. A guy that's not deficient in any category is a better way to say, I think about a Margot, but definitely the other three, and probably even with Margot, I would hope I'm not in a position where I have to have him. So I absolutely agree with that. And I would probably set the bid at somewhere between $9 and $11 and put them in the order I want them. For me, it would be Margot, Andrus, Mullins, LaCastro, I think. And I'd be happy with getting any one of them. I think they're all going to get the playing time to get the stolen bases you need.
Yeah, I think LaCastro probably has the least likely to get everyday playing time of these four. But from everything we've been seeing, the other three, Mullins might even, you know, also be toward the top or at the top of the Baltimore lineup as well. Andrus be everyday. Margot is going to be in the top three or top two of that lineup in Tampa Bay, mostly every day as well. There's always going to be the fear, and I know you're trying to disprove it as well with actual numbers and actual math, but there's always going to be the fear in Tampa that even if it's not a straight platoon, but there's going to be some situational decisions made on who starts when and when they start and what have you. But you know what? There's always injuries. There's always opportunities that come around the corner. So I agree.
I was just thinking of this the other day when I'm, like you said, I'm trying to convince myself of this because I think these guys get more plate appearances than we perceive. And for as many times, and it depends on which side of the platoon you're on, of course, if they're going to get pulled because of a pitching change, another day they're going to get the pinch hit opportunity because of the pitching changes. So I think they get more plate appearances than we realize.
All right, I'm going to stick in Tampa Bay for one of the next couple suggestions, and we're going to move into our hit category. Again, these are guys that have good matchups coming up. They have the possibility of getting a lot of playing time, and in the season, it'll be guys that maybe haven't been getting a lot of playing time, but now have walked into a role or due to injury or due to performance, or these guys might be able to tick up your average a little bit. So also something I always want to stress to everybody is that the games that happen in April matter just as much, not only to a major league team, but also to your fantasy team, than the games that happen in September. And there's a lot to be said about playing the same way in April as you would end up in September, where you are streaming guys in to help those last couple counting stats, even chip away at your ratios, whether they be average, ERA, whip, what have you. And knowing that those situations can help you, even though you're like, I got a guy that went 0-for-8, I got plenty of time in the year to make up for it. Sure. But on the flip side, if you got a guy that went 8-for-8 for whatever reason, that's going to help you. And just as much as if that 8-for-8 happened at the end of September, bumping up your average, and you're going to see that, it's going to feel a lot better too, because you're going to see that bump, especially early in the season where your average maybe was at .157 and all of a sudden you're above .350 and you're feeling really good. So just keep that in mind when you're making these moves, that these moves matter, and don't skip out on week one fab for sure. All right, so we've got two guys in this category. First guy I want to talk about is Yoshi Tsugo, a possible leadoff hitter sometimes, if you will, for Tampa Bay, at least based on the spring training lineups. He's been leading off more than a handful of times and playing around with first base. Right now, he's got third base and outfield eligibility in most leagues. Knowing Yahoo, he might already have first base eligibility there just because he played spring training games there. So who knows? Their flexibility on positional eligibility is something else. Not knocking it. I play in plenty of Yahoo leagues. I love it. Right. And then Ramiel Tapia over in Colorado, also somebody that I think we expect to be the leadoff hitter from the majority of games. And in cores, that's never a bad thing. Both these guys are not fully owned for sure. I did grab Tsugo in my final pick in my TGFBI league, so that 15 teamer. Shout out to Yancey Eaton. Sent out a tweet, I think the day before my last pick. And I'm like, you know what? Yancey's very smart. I'm going to go ahead and take a chance on Tsugo. And I'm pretty happy I did, especially based on what we've been seeing. So of these two guys, Kevin, what have you seen? What are you looking at? And what can we expect moving forward?
No, I like both of these possibilities a lot, actually. I drafted Tsugo yesterday in reserve rounds of a draft, precisely what you brought up. Already third base and outfield eligible, and quite possibly adding first base to that. Going back to the plate appearances that some of the Rays get being surprising, I'm speaking personally. I didn't realize just how often he did play. I knew he moved around quite a bit and had some off days, but he had the third most plate appearances of any Ray last season. And so I like him a lot. As far as Tapia, the only drawback to me is if you need RBI, he's a leadoff hitter in the National League. So then I'd rather have Tsugo. But we're not expecting Tapia to hit 321 again like he did in the short in 2020. But he hit 275 and over 400 at-bats in 2019. I think that would surprise a lot of people. So I think they both have their place. If I need the RBI, I'm definitely going the Tsugo way.
Yeah, the thing I like about Yoshi Tsugo as well is, you know, he's a lefty. So even if they do a platoon, at least he's on the strong side of it. But he is facing off. He's going to be traveling to Miami, to Boston and Fenway, and then hosting the Yankees. And between those three teams, they only have three left-handed pitchers in their rotations, as of right now, at least, combined. And so it's nice to know that he's going to have a lot of opportunity against right-handers, with a possibility even leading off against a good chunk of those right-handers for Tampa as well. And then looking even further, Tampa Bay doesn't have any off days in the week starting with the April 12th. So that's something to be said about the fact that this is a guy who has plenty of playing time ahead of him. To your point, he's shown that he gets plenty of plate appearances. Even if he's not starting a game, he's getting thrown into a game as a pinch hitter and getting those opportunities. And in a couple of weeks, he's got an opportunity to play every single day, especially in those weekly leagues you guys are in where you have your rosters do lock. In a daily league, playing 7 days in a row, it's nice, but it's not the end of the world if they're not. But in a weekly week, that's, especially for counting stats, that's gold in the opportunities. These are two guys I'm definitely looking at in leagues that I don't roster one of them already.
Yes.
But based on the fact that where these guys are going to be in their lineups, what their matchups are moving forward, I think Tapia and Colorado, they have a ton of home games to start the season, if I'm not mistaken, as well. So that's something.
I counted earlier, 15 out of 26 games in April at Coors.
To start the season. That's big. Everybody knows that's big. So what are you, in a vacuum or in certain situations, what are you expecting these guys to go for in respective leagues?
Very little. I think if they weren't drafted, people don't want them. I think these are guys $5 or $6 out of $1,000, $1 two at the most in $100 fab leagues. And I think you can score these guys. They're just not exciting. They're not sexy. So I don't think it'll take much, a little bit over the minimum, just because I hate to put the minimum in and then losing that to someone else does. And I lose a tiebreaker, whatever it is, for some reason. So just barely over the minimum.
Yeah. I think these are guys that we're looking at as guys who have opportunity, not so much as guys that are going to replace somebody else. So like, I agree. I don't think that these are guys that most fantasy managers are looking at to replace Luke Voigt or to replace Eloy or what have you, but they do have opportunity ahead of them and they can be useful. So these are guys that I think you can take advantage of the fact that there are these other injuries that those players who have rostered those injured players are going to be looking elsewhere to make a big splash, to make up. They don't want to lose ground early in the season. And if you're not that team, you can, you know, take advantage, to Kevin's point, and save some fab.
Yeah, absolutely. And bringing up Eloy brings up something that we mentioned but didn't talk about a lot. George Springer is still listed day to day, but I find it really hard to believe that he's going to play the first weekend of the season, maybe even longer, because they said it was a grade 2 oblique strain. That's not good. So
not good, Bob.
These are the type of guys that grab one of these guys that are outfield eligible just in case. Like, we're still holding out hope for Springer, but we might need someone just in case. These guys are perfect.
Yeah. And if you can't grab, in most leagues, Randall Gutschick is already drafted. He's probably not right. Available on your wire. Rowdy Tellez might be, and he'll probably see some added playing time in Toronto because of the Springer injury, at least to start the season. And Tellez might be somebody worth looking into if you did lose Voigt as well, and he is available because of this situation. But yeah, to your point, the guys that are not as sexy but have the outfield eligibility and they have the opportunity ahead of them, especially in a short period, save some fab, but go $4, $5, $6, like Kevin said, and get yourself some Tapia or some Yoshi.
Even just week one. They're right. One of the few teams that play 4 days and they're all at Coors.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah.
All right. We'll move on to pitchers here. And so we'll go into our counting stats guys. These are guys who can rack up hopefully a couple of wins, or at least put themselves in a situation where they can rack up a couple of wins and at least strike out a few extra guys that maybe somebody else on your roster isn't going to be able to do based on matchups or what have you. Kevin, give me a guy. We're going to look for a guy that has, nobody's going to have 2 starts in week one. So we're going to look ahead an extra week, if you will, to 2-start pitcher for the first full week of the season. And then we'll go into a couple other pitcher pickups for various other reasons.
Yeah, a couple of guys that we've been talking about throughout the offseason for this purpose, scenarios fell apart on us. Either they're injured or they moved up, so they're pitching on Sunday of the opening weekend, and the matchup isn't nearly as great. But one guy that appears to have a couple of at least decent matchups going into the first full week of the season for me is Brett Anderson of the Milwaukee Brewers. He's a guy that, without going into real specific numbers, just in general in my mind, he's been pretty darn good when healthy. He just hasn't been healthy in long stretches throughout his career. He's healthy right now, and he's lined up to have a 2-start week in the first full week, one at Wrigley, which typically favors pitchers early in the season, wind blowing in, that type of thing. And then at St. Louis, whose lineup is pretty darn good. However, that not a lot of runs are typically given up in that ballpark. And a 33-year-old crafty veteran that's been good when healthy is perfect for those types of ballparks in my mind. So, and he's having a nice spring. He's got a little over 15 innings and he's 12 strikeouts, a 2.35 ERA. Those numbers aren't what I'm really looking for. They don't matter. We know that. It just looks like he's healthy, and he's been pretty darn good throughout his career when he's healthy. So I like Brett Anderson, and if I can get a hold of him in some leagues, I will use him for that 2-start week.
Yeah, when I saw you put Brett Anderson on here, my first reaction was just a cringe. I'm like, I don't want to roster Brett Anderson anywhere. But
it's better than my Wade Miley one, which has fallen completely apart. So don't listen to that one.
Yeah, we'll just edit that out of the previous podcast. Yeah, and the other thing I thought about Brett Anderson, I'm like, this is not a guy I'd be interested in, because I don't see him being able to go 5 innings and get the decision. And then I looked into him a little bit more, at the very least last season. And he started late. He didn't start games until August. And he started off very poorly, going 3 innings, 3 and 2/3, 4 and a third. But then for his, those are just the first three outings, first three starts. But then his his six of his last seven starts of the season, he went either six or five innings every single one. And most of those, he went the full six and was able to at least qualify for quality starts. They weren't all quality starts, but at least he went six innings. And so that surprised me as well. At the beginning of the offseason, I was worried about the Milwaukee starters because they made the announcement over there that said that we expect all of our starters not to go more than 100 innings, more than they would what we saw them do in 2020. And Anderson only pitched 47 innings last year. And so for the whole course of the season, to see him go 147 innings, not that terrible per se.
I bet that would end up being above average if he could get there.
Yeah, that's true. Now it's a question, will he get there? But you know what? I don't care about the whole season with Brett Anderson. I only care about what he's going to do in the first full week of the season. So I like those matchups. Do you know, are you trying to get, is this a guy you're trying to get like under the radar because he's not pitching this first, the first couple days of the regular season? He's with the number four starter in Milwaukee. And so are you trying to get him under the radar, or are you willing to, you know, spend a couple extra dollars knowing that other people are looking ahead an extra week for those two starters?
Couple dollars out of a thousand, I think, gets him. Of course, if anybody is looking to do two start pitchers, it is the first week that you can. So it kind of is the same week in a sense. However, I don't think people are interested in Brett Anderson. You know, I really don't. Like you said, when you first saw the name, you cringed. That's what other people do, and they keep scrolling as they're looking for their two start pitchers for next week. So I don't think you have to spend much.
I do think that there's something to be said, though. If he's still on the wire come next week's FAB, he'll go for more. He'll go for more that FAB than he would now. So if you have the stash spot, and this, we're cutting into our little take out the stash section here, but if you got the stash spot for a guy like this, then yeah, get him now. Get him.
Oh, yeah. I'm doing it this week for sure.
All right. Other guys that kind of fit into this category are the quote unquote followers or the long relievers that might be jumping in. And it's really hard to, and we were talking about this pre-recording, and it's really hard to tell this early in the season who those guys are going to be per se. And so I don't think we want to make a recommendation, but I did want to touch on the fact to work on what you said just a little bit ago. A couple of guys that we've been looking at, their situation has fallen apart. And two I really want to touch on is Alec Mills of the Cubs and TJ Antone of the Reds, not making their respective rotations and being put into either long relief or just maybe a fireman or just a guy that they can rely on. And what I want to recommend is these are guys that were drafted in a ton of places because there was so much hype, especially based on the fact that they have the Cubs facing Pittsburgh in their first week and what have you, and they have pretty good matchups coming up. And I wouldn't necessarily, just because they didn't make a rotation, these aren't guys I don't think I'd be dropping right away. They wouldn't be the guys I would be dropping to pick up Brett Anderson, if you will, or what have you, because these are guys that very well might come in a situation where the starter, not so much that they're coming in as a follower, but they're coming in to as a fireman, or if they're, and they might be putting themselves into a situation where they are going to put themselves in a position to get that win and maybe even still go 2, 3, maybe even 4 innings in the right situation and get those counting stats. You'd have to have a very specific roster to actually start them, I think, at least for the first. Actually, this is a situation where you might start these guys in this first week just because there's only 3 to 4 games being played and you might not have pitchers, you might not have starters in your roster that are scheduled to start at all this first weekend. So they're good guys to fill in if necessary as well. And they have, especially in the situation of Mills, they've got good matchups to start the season, at least in this first week.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. I would try to avoid dropping them if I could, at least for the first 2 or 3 periods. I think the common thought with Antone is he may be used in high leverage situations later in games since he didn't make the rotation. And either one or the other could work out for us in the long run. I would hold him as long as I could. And the same with Mills. I think the intriguing thing with Mills was he first came on my radar when Nick was talking about his nice early season matchups. Yeah. And that's what got him on the radar. Then Eno started telling us that he's perfect for this new type of skills that the Cubs are looking for, that all the guys they're bringing in have some similarities in some ways to Kyle Hendricks, and they're the type of pitcher they want to use. And we all love Kyle Hendricks, so he's really intriguing to me. I'm not going to cut him unless I have to. I agree with you 100% on both these guys.
So we talked about the matchups, if you will, and that leads us, we'll stick with the Cubs. And there's a starter who did make the rotation, Edbert Alzolay, who is going to be able to take advantage of that matchups instead of Alec Mills. And so is Alzolay, if where he's available, is he somebody you'd be interested in based on that matchup? Or is it more of Mills Absolutely. Being
he gets two first two starts against Pittsburgh, right, that we were looking at. I think one of the spots on our show and throughout the season for Fab is like picking on Pittsburgh is going to be, we're going to be looking at.
I'll add that as a category.
That's going to be a thing. Like, who are the Pirates playing until they prove us wrong? That's going to be a thing in fantasy football. What's the defense, the Jets, right?
Yeah.
So I think picking on Pittsburgh is going to be a thing.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And he won that job. Like, he won that rotation spot. I think I'd be, you know, willing to spend an extra $2 or $3 on him rather than just do straight dollar days in this situation with the expectation that he might hold on to, especially in a 15 teamer. If he is available, he is 95% rostered in TGFBI. So he's available at least in one league, if not two out there. So I'm pretty sure he'll get bid on, especially since he won the job in those leagues that where he was not drafted. But in 12 teamers, at least in Yahoo, he is 3% rostered across all Yahoo right. leagues. So yeah. He is readily available. And I don't think they're going to have enough time to listen to it, but I have a home dynasty supplemental draft on Sunday night. And so this will be a guy that I definitely am looking at, and it's a 12 teamer. So this will be a guy that I'm looking at the draft to take advantage of that matchup. And then he very well could just be my first drop, no matter how well he does. And so just because the replacement level and the streaming opportunities in a 12 teamer, everybody knows, is obviously much, much greater than in a 15 teamer. And you can, Kevin, you stressed in a podcast or two ago that we got to be willing to drop the guys when they're just not performing, when they're injured or what have you. Got to be willing to drop them. But in a 15 teamer, that's much harder to do with a guy that you're just not sure about. Now, the guys that are hurt, I think those are a lot easier because they're just guys that aren't going to come back, or you can't stash them that long. But like the guys that are middle of the road, you think could get better. Those are the guys that are, at least in a 15 teamer, are harder to drop just because the replacement value isn't always that good. But in a 12 teamer, a lot easier to cut those guys loose.
Yeah. And if you drafted recently, or if we drafted recently, these teams, we should be okay. We should still have that spot. We shouldn't need a spot yet. So I think we have time yet. As we get into the season, and sometimes it happens pretty early, then that can become a pretty big issue.
All right, and there's one guy I want to touch on. I'm going to get your take on him as well in our ratios category, guys, that might be able to chip away at, or at least start you off with a decent ERA and WHIP if you need the if you need this type of player. Is that Logan Allen in Cleveland, who he very well actually might make the rotation as of this recording. He has not, but I think there's a lot of speculation based on his strong spring training start that he actually, as the only lefty in that rotation, possibly as of right now, that's a righty heavy rotation in Cleveland, and there's always a possibility that Cleveland can send Tristan McKenzie back down to the minors to start the season and manipulate his time a little bit more. And this is a completely speculative play because that has not been announced. He's still on the roster. It hasn't been sent down yet, if he does at all. And so this late into spring training, you start to think, oh, at the very least, he's going to make the roster. And obviously this is a guy, Logan Allen. This is Logan Allen who was traded from the Padres, not Logan Allen who they just drafted last year's draft. And remember, Cleveland does roster two Logan Allen spelled exactly the same way. So make sure you know who you're bidding on, and you're not bidding on, say, the wrong Wander Franco, which happens at least in a handful of leagues every year. What are your thoughts on Logan Allen? Is this worth the dollar spec pick, or even $2 if you think a couple of people, and he's going to get a little bit of hype on Twitter. What are your thoughts on this situation?
That's the thing. He has been getting this little bit of hype. I don't know how many people buy into it. I buy into it enough that I agree with everything you just said. Definitely worth taking a look at. And I think to your point about the rotation, we're at this point now where teams are trying to get this lined up and get guys on schedule. And I believe he went 5 full innings last time out, if I'm not mistaken, and didn't give up any runs again and just had another great outing. And if we see that early this week, that he has another start and they send him out there 5 or 6 innings, then that means they're planning on him starting next weekend or early next week in my mind. So to answer your question, though, that means are we bidding on him tonight as this is dropping on Sunday morning? And I think so. I think it's worth that couple bucks. If you have a spot, I don't think it's somebody you have to make room for, but if you have a spot, it's worth it, because if he does go out there the following week or is actually named to the rotation, then the price goes up. So I have a couple of leagues where I have 3 or 4 guys I can drop already. Sure. Due to injuries, maybe even due to not making the opening day roster. I have spots in some leagues, and this is a perfect guy for a league like that, where if it doesn't work out, I might know already next weekend. And so I already have my drop for next weekend as well, but it's worth speculation, I think.
All right. And then of course, saves, so hard to, I mean, if you haven't, the only guys that are going to be on your wire are those teams that drafted prior to the last couple of weeks, at the very least. As we talked about, the beauty of drafting as close to the season as possible is you have more knowledge what those closer battles are turning into, those injuries are turning into. But something that happened recently was that Matt Barnes in Boston was tested positive for COVID with no timeline for return. So that, of course, speculates Adam Ottavino, who the Red Sox got by basically purchasing him from the Yankees earlier this offseason. And I think that he's quite available, and he is 98% rostered across a TGFBI. But if you go,
he's usually available in 12 team leagues.
Yeah, absolutely. So somebody I think definitely worth looking at for fab bids this first week, because you have no idea when you're going to be able to get your saves. And if you got a guy that you are very confident is going to be in the role to start the season, and it could be indefinite, you don't know how long it's going to take Barnes to come back. You also don't know if Barnes will get the job back when he does return. What are your thoughts of this situation? And are there any other closer situations that you're looking at in this week 1?
Yeah, I'm looking at Ottavino in a league or two where he might be available out of necessity. But as you said, just we don't know Barnes gets the job back right away. We also don't know Adam keeps it. I think he could. I'm of the opinion he should have had the job in the first place. And you, as a Red Sox fan, you told me off the air. There's a very good chance here he could keep it. In a 12-team league where he's available and I'm short on closer, I'd spend a little money here. I don't think I would spend this money to sit him on my bench, because I already have closers. I don't think I would go that route. I think another, and we talked about this with Rick, I think we may have even talked about it a time or two before that, is this horrible situation in Texas is looking more and more to me like Ian Kennedy is going to get a bulk of the saves there. And I know that scares people. I know people don't care. I know a lot of people say, I don't care who the closer is in Texas, I'm not touching it. But closers on bad teams can rack up a lot of saves. We saw it from Shane Green in Detroit. Saw it years ago from Joaquin Soria in Kansas City, long before they ever got back to the postseason in 14 and 15. Soria was racking up a lot of saves on bad Royals teams. They don't win games by more than 3 runs. You win 60 games, there's 55 save opportunities there. So a guy like Kennedy is very interesting to me and going to cost quite a bit less money. Available in more leagues as well. Yeah, going to have a couple of bids in on him as well. Cheap ones, because he may not perform either. He's not Ottavino. I am confident that as long as he has that role, is going to perform well in that role. Not so sure about Kennedy, but he's going to have the role for a little while, I believe. So worth a little bit to me.
Yeah, Ottavino rostered in 98% of TGFBI leagues, where Ian Kennedy is rostered in 2% of TGFBI leagues. Definitely more readily available, Kennedy is. And to your point, he probably goes for a little bit cheaper because of all the talk about just completely avoiding the Rangers situation. So you could luck into a situation where you're able to rack up a couple of saves, and there's no timetable for anybody to replace him if he's the closer first and foremost. They have a couple of options in the bullpen between Matt Bush and what have you, but Kennedy has the experience. He is the guy that has racked up the most saves, if you will. So he definitely, I think, the number one guy to look at in that bullpen. Ottavino, I think he's going to go for a little bit more. I mean, to your point, I'm like, I'll probably bid on Ottavino, but I'm not going to go crazy. Like, I'm not going to bid 10% of my budget just because he's a closer on an average or slightly above average team. In situations like that, where you don't know if, first of all, you don't even know he has the job. We're speculating here. We know that. And so unless I know for sure he's got the job, he's going to stick around. It's just like drafting closers. You're not going to spend a top 100 pick on a guy. Some people did, but I'm not going to spend the top 100 pick on a closer that I'm not positive he's going to be in the role all year, or at least I'm not confident. So I'm not going to spend 10% of my FAB budget on a guy that, and I've gotten burned by this in the past. And so this is where I've learned my lesson, if you will. And so, I mean, I don't know about you. I'll throw out a double digit bid, but it's not going to be more than, it probably won't be more than like 15 or 20 bucks. And I don't think I'm going to get him for that amount. I think he's going to go for much more than that, or at least a good chunk more than that. I don't know. I'll do a keep your honest bid on Kennedy, but I'm not sure that I'll go double digits on Kennedy.
I think you can get him for less than double digits.
Then maybe it won't be a keeper honest. Maybe I will get him. We'll see. Yeah. All right. And so, Kevin, you got one wild card player you want to throw out there, just somebody to keep an eye on. Why don't you talk a little bit about that selection?
I don't even know where to start, actually, because I don't have a really good reason for this, other than it really seems like he's going to get the playing time. I'm talking about Ahmed Rosario here for the Cleveland Indians. He's going to be the starting center fielder. He may hit at near the top of the lineup some days, but mostly he's going to be towards the bottom. But I think this is another one of those guys that, unfortunately, it's not just that it was a shortened season. It's like, we don't know, you know, specifically what these guys were going through with the shortened season, the protocols and all this. And I think we're punishing is the wrong word. We're not punishing him. Maybe we're punishing ourselves by not drafting this guy. In 2019, 15 home runs and 19 stolen bases. And we were really excited about him coming into 2020. I think the biggest thing in 2020, he still hit 252. He didn't get on base a whole lot. And that's probably what leads to this Knicks thing, but the zero stolen bases. I think that's the thing. More than anything else, zero stolen bases. We kept hoping he'd hit at the top of the Mets lineup, and that never happened. But that zero in the stolen base column probably answers my question. That's why he's being shunned by fantasy owners. And in Cleveland, I don't think that's going to be a zero or anywhere close to a zero. And he was on pace for double-digit home runs again. I think he still does that. Double-digit home runs. And back closer to those 19 and 24 stolen bases that he had in 2019 and 2018. So it's just really intriguing to me. And his eligibility, he doesn't have outfield eligibility yet, but he will. That's going to be where he's playing. And so shortstop, outfield. And I don't think that a lot of people are after him yet. I think it's going to take seeing him get out there and start stealing bases again for a lot of people. So he's somebody that I'm willing to snag up now if I have a spot for him.
So in those right situations, then, how much do you think let's say you didn't use your entire $40, but quote unquote $40 budget on a replacement guy like Franco or Upton, sorry, more like Upton that you talked about earlier, and you still got a lot of money to play around with. How much of that do you think you put toward Rosario? And is he kind of the guy that you play a game with? You were like, I think, to your point, people don't care enough about him and I can get him on the cheap, or, hey, this is a guy I really want, I'm going to make sure I get him.
Kind of in between. I think I would protect against the $10 bid. And then I'm going to protect. This is where it's important to know people in your league and know Do they make even number bids? You know, this is a good spot right here because I just want to protect. I'm not going to go. If somebody wants to spend $20 on him in $1,000 fab, they're going to beat me. But I don't think many people are going to go double digits on him. I just want to protect against that 10 and 11. I think 12 bucks. I think that's would be my exact bid in most leagues. Unless I knew this is the thing. Vlad Sedler talks about this a lot. I hear him say this all the time. There are guys in your leagues that every single bid they make ends in the same digit. So if that guy's out there in my league and it ends in a two, then yeah, I'll go 13. I think I'm in that spot.
Yeah. Or you have the guy in your league who bids $69 on every single player of right. any value. Yeah. So I'm like, all right, 71 just to be sure. But there you go. All right. That's interesting. That's good. All right. And so we touched on all of our stash guys already. So I'm just going to run through those real quick. And we talked about stashing Brett Anderson for his probable two-start week, the first full week of the season. Rafael Dolis as the new handcuff in for the Blue Jays closer position with Jordan Romano. So keep an eye on him as well. Curious to know how much he goes for, if it's more than just a couple bucks in your league. And in most NFBC leagues, you can't draft prospects anyway. Not an area that we really touched on this week, but Logan Allen is somebody I think worth keeping an eye on in that respect. And then possibly some of those free agent outfielders that we mentioned, if they find a role early on in the season, maybe for the White Sox. I heard they have an opening.
Unfortunately.
But yeah. A quick recap. Looking at for power, Justin Upton, Jay Bruce, Michael Franco as kind of backup bids. Justin Upton being toward the top with a possible of a $40 to maybe $70 bid there. If you need speed, you got a lot of guys in most leagues. Manny Margot and Elvis Andrews are owned in a majority of 15 teamers, but right behind them, Cedric Mullins and Tim LaCastro in Baltimore and Arizona, respectively. Probably get one of those guys in the $10 range and be happy with whoever ends up on your team to add a couple of stolen bases for the next week or two. Guys who have good matchups that might be able to help you out, maybe not as a replacement for anybody, but that's Yoshi Tsugo in Tampa, Ramil Tapia in Colorado. Both of them have good matchups, a lot of playing time. Tapia, of course, with Colorado, has four games in Colorado to start the season. And then Tsugo in Tampa, no off days of the week of April 12th. So somebody maybe worth stashing for that full seven-game stretch. And the pitching side, we talked about, of course, stashing Brett Anderson for his possible two-start week. And then not dropping Alec Mills or TJ Antone and see how they end up being used in the first week of the season. Maybe they vulture some wins, especially in this first week of play, this first 3 to 4 days of play, where you might not have a full roster of starters going scheduled to start this first weekend. Got the fifth starter position in Chicago is going to get a sweet matchup against Pittsburgh. Picking on Pittsburgh, I like that. A $2 to $4 bid will probably grab him for you if he's available in your league as well. Logan Allen, if you can pick up prospects, worth a speculative bid, $1, $2 bid on him if he makes the Cleveland rotation as the only lefty. They don't need per se a fifth starter until about halfway through the month, but he's probably going to make the roster even if it's not as a starter to start, so he could still be end up being useful as a good stash. And then on the closer side, Adam out of in Boston, personally I expect him to go higher, but I'm probably going to bid anywhere between $20 maybe $25. And then Ian Kennedy in Texas, Kevin thinks a seven, no more than $10 bid if I'm willing to go double digits. And then Ahmed Rosario is a wild card. Protect the double digit bid, $12 as a speculative outfielder. He hasn't looked great in the outfield, but Terry Francona did say that he does plan on throwing him out there. So it shouldn't be too long before he gains that eligibility. All right. I think that's going to do it. We are going to be looking for all of you guys, all of our listeners, to give us the goods as well. So let us know what your fab is going for in your league on Twitter at On The Wire Pod, and let us know who you're bidding on, what you lost out on, some of the big names that went and how much they went for. Let us know what kind of league you're in, 12 team, 15 team league, et cetera, et cetera. If you have any weird fab budget rules, those are interesting to know as well. We'll definitely be crowdsourcing as much information as possible so we can make even more educated decisions and suggestions on fab bids throughout the course of the season. We'll also be taking all your fab related questions in, not only on Twitter, but also through the PL Discord. So if you're not a PL Plus member, get on that right now. Go to pitcherlist.com and sign up, and you can pick our brains and the brains of about 800 members at all times. And it is extremely active, and highly recommend you take advantage of that. We'll be setting up some office hours for Kevin and myself as well to do some, maybe some live talk, live chats in the Discord throughout the season. So look for that as well moving forward, and get pick our brains directly in real time. And that'll be through the PL Discord as well. So Kevin, how you feeling about moving forward with your fab this week? Are you expecting a lot of action in your leagues, or do you think it's going to be a little quieter?
I think it's going to be fairly quiet. The guys that lost Eloy, of course, are probably scrambling, trying to figure out what they're going to do. Some of them may be okay. Maybe they have a sixth outfielder that was good. There's always going to be activity around closing situations, changing, or even possibly changing. In a couple of cases, changing, at least for a little while. But I think for the most part, as we stated earlier and throughout the show, if the drafts were fairly recently, it should be pretty quiet. I think most people feel like they drafted pretty good teams.
That's the beauty of draft season, right? You can leave your draft and be like, 12 teams out of 12 all feel like they have a championship quality team, yeah, no matter what. All right. Well, that's going to do us. That's going to do it for this week's edition of On the Wire. Our first fab season is in the books. Make sure you check out Kevin's article over on pitcherlist.com. He'll be writing up his fab suggestions over there as well. Every week, you can look for, on Saturdays, you can look for my Need for Speed column. Well, I'll be specifically looking at stolen base streamers that you can utilize for the rest of the weekend and into the next week as well. And all of the amazing articles that we have scheduled over at PitcherList on the day daily. So much good stuff, not just the podcast. And so check out PitcherList.com every day. It should be your number one stop, of course. But you can follow, but you can talk to us on the Twitter as well. Follow me at 80grade, all spelled out. And Kevin is at HastingKevin. And let us know how your bids went and what you're looking to do the next couple days leading into next week. We wish you the best of luck in all of your leagues and hope you win all of your bids by exactly $1. For Kevin Hastings, I am Adam Howe, and with that, we bid you goodbye.